Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Alvin. I find myself in Wichita, Kansas. I don't know how this happened, but I'm here. Here's the issue. Because it's the launch date today, Tuesday, for my new book, yes. I probably never mentioned it. It's called Is Atheism Dead?
Yes.
And it's a handsome book. It's 400 and something pages, color photos, and you can get it for 45% off. If you go to my website, ericmetaxas.com, scroll down. This is very limited. I don't know how they can do 45% off. I'm not joking. I don't care where you order it from, by the way, but I'm just letting you know. But because today is the launch date, you thought you could interview me
yes.
about the book. Now, we did that in hour one. We recorded that a couple of days ago. But of course, we didn't scratch the surface. There's so much bizarre stuff in this book. I'm so excited yeah. about it that I can't shut up, and I apologize. So let me just ask you,
yes.
why don't you ask me, or you don't even have to ask me a question. You can just comment on what you've read, because you've had a lot of interesting observations, and I was thrilled as the author to hear you respond to it.
No, it's just been tremendous. I was reading it on the train in and out of the studio, and then, of course, you went on your book tour. You've just started it, basically, and today is the big day. By the way, usually I have a candle in a cupcake, and I say, congratulations, happy new book to you, happy new, but this one has a black cover. It's about, well, death. Is atheism dead? And it's kind of rhetorical when you ask the question.
It's about life.
Yeah,
because it's about if death life. Is dead, yes. then it is life that is alive. But it that's another life. Story.
John Smirak and others have actually brought this out. It's really written in three parts. There's the scientific part about whether you should believe in God or not. And science is continually proving the existence of God, not just like, maybe some nefarious. No, there's a loving God who is a designer and designed this place that we live. Okay, then there's biblical archaeology that continually proves that the Old Testament and New Testament, these are not just stories, these are true accounts of what happened in the past. So that proves the God of the Bible, belief in a God of the Bible, who's a designer and a loving God. And then the last part is just delightful because it's about a previous atheists like Camus and Jean-Paul Sartre, and how they came to faith at the end of their lives. And that's incredible because they looked at the evidence and they were open-minded. And you said at the end of the book, and this will be my opening question to you, you said that you can no longer, because of the evidence, be an atheist, but it's still okay to be an agnostic. So what is the difference between an atheist and an agnostic?
I think an atheist is a person that really, for them, it's a philosophy. In other words, they say there is no God, and they take this stance against God, and they claim that that has to do with reason, and they're pro-reason and anti-faith. All of that falls apart when you look at it. It doesn't make sense. It's just kind of an angry, it's like a tattoo. It's like, hey, Ma, Dad, I'm my own man now. I think at some point you have to go through that and to the other side and see that even if you don't like people of faith or you don't like what the Bible says, you can be an agnostic and say, I have questions. I mean, gnosos, you know, it refers to knowledge. Agnostic is to be without knowledge, to still have questions. I'm not sure. That to me seems respectable. And yet, what we call atheism, which says, I know there's no God, or I'm pretty sure there's no God. I don't think in this day and age it can make sense if you look at the evidence. If you don't look at the evidence, I mean, if you read this book, I don't see how you come out an atheist. You may still say, well, I don't like the writer. He's an idiot. I find a lot of stuff in here tenuous. Great. It's a free country. You can think what you like. But to say there's no God once you read the scientific evidence. And by the way, have we played the Hugh Ross hour yet?
He's coming up this week. Ross is coming up.
Hugh Ross says, and this is true. In other words, in my book, I talk about all the evidence coming out from science that makes it less and less possible to fathom that the universe just arose randomly, right? Hugh Ross says practically every day, every month, more evidence is coming out. And he's on top of this. If you go to Reasons to Believe, which is his magnificent ministry organization, wow. But he says it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. If you are clinging to some idea that science is going to prove there's no God, the opposite has been happening for decades and it's accelerating. Yeah. So I just think we have to be honest. And it gets to the end of the book. I talk about what I call the founding myth of atheism, this battle between Galileo and the church, which when you read that chapter, you realize that itself is a lie. The way it's been presented is essentially not true. But the bigger issue is that Galileo was a profound Christian who believed that, it's what the scripture says, the heavens declare the glory of God. In other words, that whatever you study in the heavens or on this earth, it's going to declare the magnificence of the God who created it. And so he's looking through his telescope. He sees, for example, the big issue was that, the planets and the sun are not revolving around the earth. On the contrary, it is we on earth who are traveling around the sun. And he said to people, take a look through the telescope. Don't take my word for it. Look through the telescope. Look at the evidence. Dare to look at the evidence.
Yeah.
And people refused to look through the telescope. And he joked about it at one point. But I feel like people are so dug in.
Yeah.
Excuse me. People are so dug in that they don't even want to look at the evidence. They just bat it away. And I think.
Well, that's the thing. You're just asking people to keep an open mind. Just keep your mind open to what we're going to present here. That's what Galileo.
You can't prove God. In other words, God himself has to touch a person's heart. So there's a great mystery there.
Yeah.
But you can try to understand the facts. It's kind of like if you study math or science or history, you just want to know what is. And I think people can become so entrenched that they don't want to know what is. They don't want to know the truth of the facts. That's bad. So I want to say to people, I try in the book to present it as fair-mindedly as possible. I've discovered 3 or 5 ridiculous typos, which we have to change. I think I say something crazy like the diameter of Jupiter is 900,000 miles across. It's 90,000 miles across. I think I say something that Pluto has no moons. Technically, that's not true. There's a couple of things like that in there, but we're going to fix them in the second duration. But none of that will affect the basics, as you'll see. But I say that just so that, you know, when you're rushing a book to print, you miss stuff like this. But I just think the evidence is so overwhelming that I want at least people of faith to acquaint themselves with these facts, because it's overwhelming, and almost nobody knows this. So I'm a popularizer. I put this stuff in a book to make it easy for your average reader. You know, you don't have to read the books that I read, but you can at least grasp the basics. And I'm telling you, we're living in exciting times right now. This is very exciting that this knowledge has not been known on a popular level.
Yeah. You know what? And this, I don't think this is in the book. I haven't gotten to everything. I'm a few pages from the end, believe it or not, but John Paul Sartre, his dying words, apparently recorded by a guy named Pierre Victor. He said this is amazing from Sartre. He said, "I do not feel that I am a product of chance, a speck of dust in the universe, but someone who was expected, prepared, prefigured, in short, a being whom only a creator could put here. And this idea of a creating hand refers to God." And that's amazing. New York Times.
Those weren't his dying words, but they were near when he was near death, and he wanted to write this down to make it clear that this wasn't the doddering ravings of an old man, but that he had thought this through. But it's more dramatic than I even remembered. When you just read it right now, I thought, that's Jean-Paul Sartre.
Yes.
Like the idea that he, who was this arch atheist philosopher, that he wrote this, and it made his atheist friends very angry. Oh, we're going to a break. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Hey there, folks. Have you ever looked for a business podcast? You're into business, but you also like to be entertained. So you're looking for a funny business podcast. Well, some of them try to be funny. They're just not funny, which is a problem. I think I have the answer for you. If you like business news and current events with a side of actual comedy, you want to listen to, I can't say this with a straight face, it's called IP Frequently. The hosts are David and Brad. IP Frequently, solid business advice that leans right, conservative, comes with 80s music and current events. They're calling it the unicorn of business podcasts. Is that a good thing? If it's funny, it is a good thing. They're also calling it the holy grail of business podcasts. Subscribe to IP Frequently and stay up to date on their weekly stream of episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Go to ipfrequently.com. That's ipfrequently.com.
Folks, today's the day my book launches. You can get a very, very inexpensive copy at our website, ericmetaxas.com. You have to scroll down to one of the links on the book page. Alvin, you've been interviewing me about the book, so have at it. This is fun to be on the other side.
Yeah, I want to finish up with Jean-Paul Sartre. Believe it or not, the New York Times obit said this: Jean-Paul Sartre finds the exit. That's a joke.
That was a joke. I was so hoping that the Times had actually said something about this. Well, people may not get the joke. He wrote a book called No Exit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, and okay. Now, dovetailing off of all that, I really like this in the book. You talk about deathbed confessions, and you say they're not out of desperation. They're out of something else. Do you remember what you say in the book?
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to explain?
Well, people like Christopher Hitchens, who passed away a number of years ago, very typically viciously characterized deathbed conversions as, you know, just moments of desperation, fearful desperation. And they're always characterized negatively. And I said, well, look, maybe that is true, but the opposite is also true. And you've seen this time and time again. When someone is dying, they often don't care what other people think. They're not afraid of what somebody's going to say at a cocktail party. They're able to look for the first time with perfect clarity and honesty at what they see. And people don't often talk about that sometimes you see the true person when they're facing death. It was probably the great Dr. Johnson who said that, you know, the prospect of death focuses a man's mind. I can't remember, I'm paraphrasing, but there is just something about that when you're suffering or when you're actually facing death, you're very inclined to be more focused on these things. You can't bat them away. They don't leave your field of consciousness, so to speak. You're thinking about them all the time. And I think you have many cases of people who, as they approach death, they're forced to get serious. They realize, I can't play games anymore. And so they do come into the church, ask for forgiveness. That's really serious. And that's another thing that simply needs to be said, that the lie promulgated by people like Christopher Hitchens that the deathbed conversions are all by definition nonsense, that is itself nonsense. And I think one of the reasons I go so hard after Hitchens and Dawkins is that they pushed powerful untruths over and over and over. It was nasty. It was intellectually dishonest. And when you keep talking about You know, faith is the precinct of people who aren't interested in logic and facts and reason. And then you yourself are promoting lies and using sophistry and really, you know, a juvenile forensic tactics, you know, just to get the audience on your side and not really being yourself honest. You have to be called out on that. And I was, as I've said it many times, stunned by how bad particularly Hitchens and Dawkins are as philosophers. I mean, it's just staggering. It's like they simply didn't care, and they had a great incentive just to get laughs, to get applause, to get people on their side. They're preaching to the choir of people like them who had perhaps been stung by religion in a way that made them have a particular animus against it. So I just thought it needed saying.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt book sales either if you continue to...
Oh, well, that's the whole thing. They sold zillions of books, and I was reading their books. I thought, this stuff is horrible, unless you want to believe it, and then you're just going to, you know...
Yeah, sometimes people just believe what they want to believe, not what the facts tell
them. We would never do that, but
not us. Hey, yeah. Listen, I like this. This is taking us back to the middle part of the book. What do the numbers 9... and 1,235 mean to you?
What do the numbers 9 and 1,235 mean to me? Actually, I don't remember that one.
You can you give me a hint? I'll give you a hint. The Bible. The Bible.
I still don't remember.
Okay, up to page 9. A lot of people using arguments.
Oh. I say, yes. Well, part of what I say when I'm talking about Stephen Collins, the Albuquerque archaeologist, he's just an amazing man, and he discovered biblical Sodom. And I thought to myself, people tend to discount the early parts of the Bible more than any. They say it's mythical, it's this, it's that, whatever. But they also tend to focus on that. In other words, you've got a huge book filled with stuff, but they almost want to find the most primitive stuff and act as though all the Bible ever talks about is a talking serpent. And, you know, I mean, not that I disagree with any of it, but the point is they use it as a way of mocking rather than dealing with, you know, the entire book, which is obviously just, I mean, it's a million different genres, much less different eras and different centuries and stuff. So I'm assuming you're referring to that.
Yeah. That the stories from the first 9 pages of the Bible, about a Bible that's over 1,200 pages long in the standard edition, right? That's from that section there, from the earliest, if you want, days of the Bible in recorded history. They'll say, oh, that can't happen. A talking serpent can't happen. A flood can't happen.
But you think that's all the Bible talks about. That's what I find so funny. It's kind of like there's Noah's Ark. There's, you know, there's the Tower of Babel. There's Eden. And this is the first couple of pages of a vast book.
Yeah.
And so I consider it taking cheap shots. In other words, it's almost, I see what they're doing. But you've got to look at the whole thing. And
going even before the existence of Bible, that's what the first part of your book is about the science of how the world came into existence. Can you explain, here's a specific, can you explain what a protoplanet is, and specifically Theia, and why we should care about Theia? Do you remember that?
Yeah. And by the way, just to clarify, I'm not saying that I don't take the first pages of the book seriously. Yeah. I'm just saying that they're probably harder to defend and whatever. And people always home in on that to mock the whole Bible, which I consider a cheap tactic. If you're serious, you can't do that. But yeah, you just talked about a protoplanet theory. Most people don't know this. And it's weird because, again, this is where science has only recently told us how the Earth came into being, how the moon came into being. 50 years ago, we didn't really know this. And even that blows my mind, that when I was a kid growing up, we didn't know these details. But the bottom line is that when the solar system was formed, I don't know, about 4.5 billion years ago, the Earth didn't exist. There was a proto-Earth, a planet smaller than the Earth, which scientists call Theia. It had an atmosphere like 50 times thicker than our current atmosphere. So if you're trying to breathe, it would be like breathing sand. Don't try it. It didn't have enough mass to support the kind of an atmosphere we need. It didn't have anything. And it was in existence for millions of years. And at some point, we now know this, recently, a Mars-sized object struck it so perfectly. If this hadn't happened perfectly, we would not be here. It struck it incredibly perfectly, so perfectly that most of the mass of this Mars-sized object that did the colliding, when it struck this protoplanet Theia, it was absorbed into the protoplanet, enlarging the protoplanet Theia into the size of Earth today. So they didn't just bounce off of each other. It was like such a powerful, perfect strike that it became what we consider Earth. And the part of it that was not absorbed was sort of shocked outward and congealed to form the moon, which is also very large. And the details, obviously it's in the book, but oh my gosh, the idea that this happened and that if it hadn't happened precisely as it did, we wouldn't be here. Again, the more you know, which is why I hope people will read the book, the more astonishing it is. You can't do it justice in a few seconds on a radio program, but you think, is there any way that this could have just happened randomly? I mean, I guess technically, but does it make sense that when this Mars-sized planet struck Theia, it gave the new planet, now called Earth, the perfect atmosphere? Most of the atmosphere, the thick atmosphere that had been on Theia, exploded away into outer space. I mean, it just all boggles the mind. We didn't know it till recently. Now we know it. Now you need to know it. Yep, and it's in my book.
Get in on the fun. Get the book today, folks.
And leave your reviews on Amazon, please, before the trolls start posting their one-star negative reviews who haven't read the book. Thank you. Feathered canyons
everywhere. In case you haven't been paying attention, the Biden administration has caused a financial crisis and they have no clue how to fix it. Oil prices have skyrocketed, and when oil prices go up, the cost of transportation and shipping spikes, leading the prices of goods to rise. And when we're already seeing record inflation, that's the last thing we need. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. If all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you are vulnerable. Gold is one of the best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your gold. It is real. It is physical. It's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Legacy Precious Metals is the company I trust for investing in gold. They can help you roll your retirement account into a gold-backed IRA where you still own the physical gold. They can also ship gold and precious metals safely and securely to your house. Call Legacy at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com.
Folks, today's the day my book launches, Is Atheism Dead? Please, if you haven't already, get the book today. It makes every bit of difference. I don't want to beg, but I will. Okay, Alvin, you're interviewing me, so you said you have some more questions.
Great book, of course. I've been reading it, and now I'm interviewing you, and it's exciting.
And I didn't ask you to do this in case anybody wonders.
No, but I always enjoy this. Every time something new comes out from you, which is every 2 a year or something like that. Okay, here it is. What is Hammurabi's code? This is a good question, I think. And what is its significance with the Old Testament prophets?
It's actually not the prophets. It's earlier in the Old Testament. The bottom line is that when they discovered Hammurabi's code, I think this was in Shushan or Susa, which they also discovered. Like this is, you know, The archaeologists keep discovering things, and they go, oh my goodness, we've discovered the city of Shushan or Susa, which is where the Book of Esther takes place. Nobody knew, did it really exist? Boom, they discover it. And while they're excavating it. This is in the, you know, what, 150 years ago. They discover this steel or stele, I never know how to pronounce it, with what we now call Hammurabi's code. And it's a detailed law, listing of laws, very detailed. And it lists, for example, the price of a slave at 20 shekels. And that and other things, which I won't go into because we don't have time, but we now have something from, you know, many, many centuries before Christ that corroborates something that never could have been corroborated before, which is in intense little specifics of, you know, when Joseph is sold into slavery in the early pages of Genesis, how much money was paid for him, how many shekels. And you can trace it through the early pages of Genesis. So here again, you have out of the sands of the desert of the Middle East, you're getting archaeological, historical corroboration of tiny details from the Bible. There are other examples. I won't go into them because we don't have time, but it is so fascinating that over and over and over, archaeology corroborates the historicity of the Bible. This is one amazing example. Actually, there's one more from the Hammurabi's code that it says the son of a free woman will proceed in terms of, you know, what they call primogeniture, if you're going to inherit, will precede the son of a slave woman. So Hagar, Ishmael, that whole story, you think one was born first. Why doesn't he inherit everything? Well, in those days, the law was the opposite. And so you see it in the pages of scripture, but then suddenly Hammurabi's code tells you, oh, yes, this is the law of the land in these days. So over and over, you see these quirky little things from scripture being corroborated in history. It keeps coming out. It's another reason to take the Bible very seriously.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, why did God allow all this stuff to happen where it could be preserved under mounds of sand and earth and all that?
Was it revealed now when things are going really crazy?
Yeah, right. Why are we finding this out now? Do we kind of need the idea that God really is there? And he's, it's like when I was in college, there was a plaque you could buy. It said, God is back, and boy, is he mad.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to go into that, but it is funny though, that just in the last 150 or so years, this evidence keeps coming out and out and out and out. And I even think in a book like mine, it's another level of exposure, because something could be true, but if nobody knows about it, does it matter? You need to kind of get it out. And, you know, I noticed so many things that people didn't know about. Before we close this, I was going to say right at the end of the book.
Yes.
I talk about
beauty. Yeah.
Beauty.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, because one of the things I write about is the incredible bleakness of atheism and how almost nobody has the courage or the intellectual rigor to stare into this black abyss, to say that, okay, there's no God, which means necessarily, even though you don't might not like it, it means there's no meaning in the universe. It means there's no source of meaning. It means that when something breaks your heart with its beauty, that's just chemicals, hormones in your body designed to perpetuate the species. There's nothing transcendent. Who can face that? Now, again, the reason I say I think atheism has to die is because we now can really see this clearly. But there are people who will insist, they will just bat that away and say, I make my own meaning. There's no God. That does not work out logically. So there are people who are going to insist that I can cry to sunset. I can weep listening to a beautiful symphony. And isn't that wonderful? But God doesn't exist. Those things contradict each other utterly. There's no middle ground. And I point to that. I talk about my dad, when he was 16 years old, during the war, he found himself in the square of Argostoli. So he's 16 years old. The war is going on. The island of Cephalonia is occupied by Germans and Italians. It's just this difficult time. And at midnight, sitting there in the square with the beautiful moonlight, they hear a trumpet playing, I think it's Toselli's Serenade. They hear a trumpet playing this thing, and people in the square listen to this music and start weeping. It was so beautiful. Oh. And it ended up being a German soldier playing this trumpet. And I asked the question in the book, we're out of time, but I say, are you going to tell me that that was just notes? That there is no meaning, there is no beauty, there is no, none of it makes sense. When you experience heartbreaking beauty, it points to God. There's no way around it. It points to something beyond this world. It needs to be said, it needs to be understood, and we'll leave it there.
Thanks, Eric. Thank you very much. Folks, get Is Atheism Dead Today?
Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works. Not only bright, but just tremendously well-informed on all these issues. And I always learn things when I talk to you. And I hate learning. I just want to let you know. I hate it.
You do.
But when I talk to you, I learn stuff, and I'm really grateful to you. But I got to tell you, I'm also grateful to you for partnering with us in partnering with CSI. And I wanted to talk to you about that. People want to know, what do I do with my money? What do I get so-and-so? I keep suggesting to people that you cannot beat this. The idea that if you give money to CSI, go to metaxastalk.com, you can help free a slave, literally. This is a nightmare evil that's happening today. We can actually do something about it. Tell us, because you know more about CSI and about these efforts than I do. You've been more involved. I want to encourage people today to go to metaxastalk.com, and I'll get the phone number. But this is like it's an amazing opportunity. It's an absolutely, it doesn't matter if you give $10 or $20 or $100 or whatever you give. This is an amazing opportunity. It's almost unbelievable that this evil exists, and it's almost equally unbelievable that we can actually do something about this evil with our dollars.
I think you can't overstate what you just said, Eric, and that is that the evil of slavery still being around is so abhorrent to the average person's way of thinking that they have a difficulty understanding that it does. They have a greater difficulty understanding that there are more people enslaved today than they've ever been in human history. Especially given the post-abolition movements of Europe and the Americas and where we've gone with all that. But in between sex slavery and chattel slavery across the world, you've got millions literally that are living subservient, second-class caste lives that are not of their own decision. They're not of their own determination. And in Sudan in particular, where the world came in, and when the Sudanese were having their civil war and you had the Arabic Islamic jihadist north, and you had the Christian south, you had the Arabs frequently going into the south, ransacking villages, taking people as property and removing them and taking them back to their homes for slave work in the north. When you understand that when the world came in and divided those two countries and said, okay, you get this area, you get that area, but didn't do anything about the slaves. And at the time, there were probably 130 to 160,000 people in captive slavery in northern Sudan at that moment. You kind of understand that the world missed a very important piece of that puzzle. Now, over the last 15 years, CSI, through the diligent work and partnership with people like your listeners, have said, well, we can do something about this. And so similar to the Reconstruction era, or just the area, just the era, you know, just following the Civil War and preceding it, you had, in essence, what were called retrievers, that people that would go into the South, scout out slaves and try to get them through the Underground Railroad to the North to freedom and to be able to provide for them a new life, a different life. In Sudan, they've had the same thing. There are a handful of Arabs that work with CSI. They personally want a good relationship with the Christians in South Sudan. They are motivated to help CSI find these slaves and get them home so that they can live safely and well. And CSI, through partnering with your listeners, for only $250, says we can give them a brand new life. Now, the majority of that $250 is not used for the liberation. The majority of that is used for the establishing of what that slave needs when they come back to freedom in South Sudan. So whether it be a goat to produce milk and food and commerce, whether it be tarps to live with, to protect from the weather elements, whether it's gardening tools or cooking utensils, et cetera, a $250 package basically is called a bag of hope. And that's what that person gets when CSI has fully retrieved them from slavery. And I want to, you said give 10, 20, et cetera. I want people to think differently about this, not the amount of dollars that they spend, but the amount of lives they want to impact. Because if you can give $20 once, could you give $25 10 times? If you can give $50 right now, could you give it over the next 5 months and rescue a slave as well? Or are you of the income level where you could take $250, make a sacrifice in your monthly budget and say, okay, our family is going to every month for the next 10 to 12 months, liberate a slave. Now, Eric, you know that I'm not a very wealthy person, but my family and I came to this decision a year ago and we said, you know what? The boys were hearing me talk about CSI on the radio. They were very concerned about slavery. And they said, Dad, what can we do? And I said, well, we could sacrifice and give and liberate a slave every month. So the McCulloughs have said for the last 12 months, we will liberate a life every single month as God provides for us as a family. And you know what? He's done that. So if people are listening and they say, well, I want to be a part of something amazing that God's doing, put yourself forward and say, God, if this is what you're calling me to, I know that you'll provide. I want to be obedient and I want to give and liberate a slave right now.
It is very difficult to believe that this evil is happening and we really want to push it away because it's too horrifying. But again, folks, it is amazing news that we can do something about it, that you can do something about it. So there are people who could give $10,000. There are people that could give $2,500. But it really doesn't matter, folks. Whatever you're able to do, this is an insane opportunity. I want to give out the phone number because there are people that prefer to call. But just go to metaxastalk.com. Everything is there. The idea of giving monthly, by the way, is brilliant. Thank you for mentioning that, Kevin, because that's just beautiful. And I think families should get involved in this with their kids.
I didn't even challenge you. Talk to your kids about it and see if they don't have the same response my kids do. Kids know kind of inherently when something is unjust.
Yeah.
And if your kids do respond, then be ready to say, okay, let's as a family attack this problem and do something about it.
All right. Here's the phone number, folks, if you want to call. Metaxastalk.com. It's all there, the banner. But if you want to call, 888-253-3522. I hope you will call 888-253-3522. 888-253-3522. And don't forget, by the way, this month only, if you go to Nutrimedics.com, use the code Eric, it's 30% off, not 20. Nutrimedics.com.
How to keep from getting the blues. He grinned as he raised his little head. He popped his shoe shine rag and then he said, get rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get rhythm.
Hey there, folks. Exciting news. We're going into the home stretch. That means that my book is launching. I cannot believe it. As the author, you work so hard on something. I worked really hard on this book, and there's stuff in here which I promise you is going to blow your mind. Albin, you've been reading it and you've been having very positive experiences with it, which always thrills me when a friend tells me, yeah, you know, what he's reading.
Yeah, I've been reading it and it's fascinating. It's blow your mind fascinating.
I mean, it is. And it's not because I wrote it. It's the stuff that I'm writing about is inherently fascinating. And okay, two things. First of all, I've not mentioned this, I don't think, before, but one thing you can do is you can ask your local library to carry this book, carry copies of the book. It's already a bestseller. That would be really helpful when libraries carry the book. So please, if you can, if you think of it, do that. I also ask you to think about buying copies to donate to libraries, to school libraries. It's just important this information get out there and be available. And you'll see when you read the book, if you haven't already done so, if you're a member of the launch team. Also, I want to say that please post your reviews, if they're favorable, as soon as possible, because there are a lot of atheist trolls out there, and they work really hard to destroy books like this. Like, they post one-star reviews on Amazon, and they've never read the book and stuff. So we need your help to please, you know, as soon as the links go live, wherever it's Goodreads or Barnes & Noble or Amazon, as soon as you can, please post your reviews. It makes a big difference.
And by the way, if Albert Camus was still alive today, he'd be giving this a 5-star review.
Yes, he would. That's right. I mean, some of the craziest stuff in the book is the fact that Camus and Sartre became believers at the end of their lives. No one seems to know about this. Don't ask me how I discovered it, except by God's grace. But when you discover it, you think, this is monster news. We've got to tell the world. The world needs to know. Whenever their names came up, say, oh, by the way, at the end of their lives, they accepted God. People are going to think that's not possible. Well, you can look it up not only in my book, but in the footnotes and the bibliography. I also want to stress we are doing a campaign for Alliance Defending Freedom. We really ask you folks to do. I've become more and more free in asking not just for money for these organizations or for people to buy my book, because I feel like we're on a crusade. We're not just doing entertainment here. We're trying to save America. We're living in some dark times. So obviously, if you want to support the program, you can go to mystore.com, mypillow.com, nutrimedics.com, and use the code ERIC. Extraordinary products. The Bonhoeffer poster, by the way, is so inspiring. I wish I could get one up in every college room in America. But I want to stress ADF, because the Alliance Defending Freedom, what they do to help religious liberty in America, to fight for our freedoms. We will have on another guest this week talking about something going on in Seattle. It's just crazy that we have to fight these battles in courts. They do it for free, folks. They do it for free. So they need our help. They are a tremendously worthy organization. I will give you the phone number, actually. Obviously, you can go to our website, metaxastalk.com. The phone number is 855-547-5333, 855-547-5333. And I also want to remind you, please go to my website, ericmetaxas.com, to sign up for the newsletter. Please, we want to send you our videos. We're all over Rumble. Please subscribe on Rumble. But we're having trouble getting our videos out because YouTube canceled us. We can use your help. Please go to ericmetaxas.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you can pre-order the book there at some really amazing prices. Just saying thank you.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.